Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Welcome to The Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. I'm Marcello Rolando. The mission of The Reasonable Voice is to connect the dots between politics and finance, the need for better and more affordable education, our humanity, world peace, and of course, the arts, which we then gladly provide our listeners, the voting public, as informative food for thought to provoke their self-determination and appetite for equal opportunity. The Reasonable Voices are advocates prioritizing education, preserving our history, leading by example for a peaceful and prosperous world by evoking and embracing the creative artist and political unity as solutions to our challenges. Welcome to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando. And continuing my support, my applause for Food Chains film, the Food Chains the movie, and I want to introduce two guests, Greg Asbed. Is that correct pronunciation of your last name, Greg?
That's perfect, actually. Well done.
Thank you. And Laura Geramino, husband and wife team. How are you, Laura?
Wonderful today. Thank you.
Along with Lucas Benitez, they are the co-founders of CIW. Greg, since we haven't talked to you before, and you are receiving the Clinton, I can't read my notes.
The Clinton Global Citizen Award.
Yes.
And I received it together with Lucas on behalf of the CIW, but it was actually an award to the CIW itself and to the Coalition of Immokalee Workers itself. So it was quite the recognition, but it was also quite the process receiving it. It was big gala ceremony up in New York that's going to be unforgettable, I think.
But, yes. Marvelous. So CIW, we've said it's a Coalition of Immokalee Workers. First of all, Laura, where is Immokalee?
Well, Immokalee is a town in Florida, and for those who would like a hint on pronouncing it, it rhymes with broccoli. And it is a labor reserve of migrant farm workers. Thousands of farm workers make Florida and Immokalee their home base during the winter season, because Florida has a very long growing season from really from November to May. And then during the summer months, farm workers move from Florida up along the East Coast, along Georgia, the Carolinas, and then to Virginia, Eastern Shore Virginia, Maryland, New York, Pennsylvania, and back down again, and over to the Southeast U.S. as well. In the center of, right above the Everglades, Immokalee sits in Southwest Florida, but it is very much a worker-based community organization that is at the same time leading a labor and human rights movement that has gone national.
And until perhaps the recognition by the Clintons and the documentary Food Chains film, I think it's probably something many Americans don't know about, and yet it's a huge movement. There are, 10 multi-million dollar food companies that are now signing on to the Fair Food Program. So, Greg, what's motivating them, and what, first of all, is the Fair Food Program?
Well, you're right. We have flown under the radar of most Americans, I think, to this point, but it is, you're exactly right, that it has become a national and even international movement for 21st century movement for human rights,
as
we call it. The Fair Food Program is unique. It's a partnership among farm workers, growers. Other people call them farmers, but they're growers. They're not, in this case, they're not small farmers. They're large corporate growers.
Yes.
With receipts, and some of them in receipts above $100 million a year, even in terms of the sales of tomatoes and other vegetables. And then the retail companies that purchase what's grown here in Florida. And it's based on two simple principles. It's driven by an alliance between workers who have been organizing for 20 years to improve the conditions they work and live in, and consumers who want to know that when they buy a tomato from Florida, that they're buying a tomato picked by people whose fundamental human rights were respected
yes.
on the job. And so the two principles are simple. It's that the retail companies, everything that stretches from McDonald's to Whole Foods to Walmart, mm-hmm. Agree that they'll do two things. They'll pay a small premium in order, you know, when they buy tomatoes from Florida, it's passed on by the growers directly to the workers
mm-hmm.
to help improve the long overdue or long standing problem of sub-poverty wages for people who pick fruits and vegetables in our country. And the second is that they'll only buy from growers who are in compliance with the Fair Food Code of Conduct.
Yes.
And that's a human rights-based code of conduct that really does guarantee that the workers who are working on farms where that code is respected are enjoying the most progressive working conditions that this country has to offer for farm workers.
Yes.
So it's a groundbreaking program based on a couple of pretty simple principles that both raises wages for farm workers and improves their working conditions. And it's incredibly verifiable, because what we've done down here is we've created a third party called the Fair Food Standards Council, which then monitors and enforces the code of conduct on the participating farms. It's one thing to say we have a code of conduct that establishes, you know, human rights principles, and it's an entirely different thing to say, and that code of conduct is enforced, rigorously enforced on the ground. And so that's what we've been able to do over these past several years. And, you know, what it's done is really a small revolution in people's lives.
It is a revolution. For people who don't necessarily think about this all the time, as you two do, it's like discovering a sweatshop where people are, well, you know, the terrible accident with people burning in a sweatshop and the awful working conditions and the lack of pay and, you know, slave labor, basically, and discovering that we here in America, we're doing that same thing, and it's not a new thing. We've been doing it to the people on the lower end of the food chain, the people who actually harvest the food, for many years. As Laura once, we shared that Edward R. Murrow years ago did a special on Thanksgiving Day called The Harvest of Shame. Tell me, Laura, I've asked you this question before. This has started in Immokalee, Florida, but you are now affecting growers and harvesters and retailers all over the country. So everyone should be listening, and let's make clear how this is a win-win-win, as you say, for everyone in the nation.
Well, when we were organizing 20 years ago, on these labor and human rights issues, right? Agriculture for decades had some of the worst working conditions in the U.S.
Mm.
And the fact that we still had forced labor on U.S. soil, meaning there were a minority, obviously not everybody, but an all too significant percentage of farm workers were working under conditions that meet the federal law, you know, the definition of federal law for modern day slavery.
Mm.
We knew that had to stop.
Yes.
And when we were beginning to organize, what happened was we looked at the fact that this is actually highly preventable because the produce that is grown in U.S. fields oftentimes goes to these large supermarket chains and restaurants and food service providers.
Mm-hmm.
And what has happened now is that, you know, no one in the U.S., and I'm talking, we had support from consumers ranging from student activists to faith-based allies to labor-based groups, basically responsible consumers across the spectrum. Now, this united people. I mean, it's the ultimate nonpartisan issue or bipartisan issue.
Yes.
And what ended up happening was that we have a solution where growers, workers, and buyers have a win-win-win situation. The workers are working in much better conditions. It's gone from one of the most regressive to the most progressive industries in the U.S., agriculture itself. You have buyers thrilled that their supply chain is free of forced labor and other abuses, and if an abuse were to come up, it would be, you know, quickly identified and eliminated under the Fair Food Program. And you have the growers very happy about the reduction in mobility, you know, the changeover of their workforce. They have a more stable workforce and are seeing all the benefits to having you know, happy, productive people harvesting in their fields.
Yes.
If I might add to that,
yes.
You know, that's what's so exciting about this, and actually about the film too, the food chains.
Yes.
It's solution based.
Yes.
You know, that's the thing, is that a lot of times problems seem just so intractable, and you know, in this country or anywhere really, like the sweatshops you're talking about, it just seems impossible to actually find a way to get all those factories to actually come up to code and protect the workers that work there. But you're right, there were some terrible industrial accidents that
yes.
happened in the past few years that everybody should be aware of, where the factories collapsed, the factories burned, and hundreds of people died at work.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And it seems sometimes impossible to fix those problems, but we've actually fixed this. We are in the process of fixing a problem that has seemed like a generational problem that would never be solved in this country. And we've done it with a very simple, like Laura's saying, by saying, you know, who are the parties involved and what do they want?
Yes.
And, you know, workers want to have better wages and better conditions. Growers don't want to be called ground zero for modern day slavery, like the Florida tomato industry was called just
yes.
4 or 5 years ago
yes.
by federal prosecutors. Federal prosecutors yes. called the Florida agricultural industry ground zero for modern day slavery. That is a very difficult reputation to overcome
yes.
in the marketplace.
Yes.
And equally, buyers don't want to worry where the next factory is going to collapse or where the next slavery case might pop up in their supply chain and then cause them a problem
yes.
with their brand and their reputation in the marketplace. So everybody has things they need, and actually there's a solution that gets at each one of those. So the Fair Food Program raises wages and improves conditions for workers. By doing so, it helps growers identify problems before they become a real problem. They identify the roots of a problem before they become a real problem, like another minimum wage case or another sexual harassment case
yes.
Or another slavery operation. And for buyers, it lets them sleep soundly at night, secure in the knowledge that their supply chain is safe from forced labor and from all the other problems that have happened in the past. So there's a way to reach a solution that can be, and the market's a really powerful medium for it to drive it, by the way, you know, by having that principle about the retailers who will only buy from growers who are in compliance. That means when you fall out of compliance, you can't sell to those 12 multi-billion-dollar retail companies. And that's too much of a loss to take. The growers are motivated by the market power of the retailers, and the workers are able to enjoy better conditions.
Yes.
Well, and the consumers, U.S. consumers,
exactly.
Don't want to have any part, once they are aware of the conditions that, you know, they could be inadvertently participating in,
yes.
which is that they're eating produce that would have, you know, labor abuses, you know, inflicted upon those who are harvesting the food.
Yes.
Consumers want that to stop. And so, like Greg was saying, the other party in all this is the U.S. consumer is thrilled that they are not having to participate in labor abuses up to and including modern-day slavery in any way.
Mm-hmm.
When you're buying something made harvested under the Fair Food Program.
Exactly. You know, I've said this before. Generally speaking, when Americans find out that they are in any way involved in a food chain of any kind that starts with the torture, the sexual harassment, sexual abuse, the poverty wages, the living conditions, the working conditions, any of that, we really get alarmed by it. And the consumer dollar is still the most powerful thing in the world. Back in the 70s or something, when those meat producers said all of a sudden they were going to raise the price of beef. Long before internet was in everyone's home, women, wives, mothers, daughters, sisters, whatever, stopped buying beef. They just stopped. And the sale of beef dropped so much and fish and poultry went up that the prices were rolled back, in less than a month. So the consumer still has that power. But earlier I said 10 multi-billion dollar food companies have signed on to the Fair Food Program. But you said 12. Yes, so that's a great update. Can we list some of those, the good guys who've seen the wages of sin and realize they need to repent?
Absolutely. And Laura, if you can, you know, fill in any blanks here, but in the fast food industry, basically all the big fast food names except Wendy's have signed on.
Wow.
So you have Taco Bell, McDonald's, Burger King, and Subway, and
yes.
Chipotle.
Yes.
Have all signed on.
Great.
Wendy's is the lone holdout, and, you know, at this point, given that all of their competitors are are paying the premium and complying with the idea of buying only from growers who are in compliance with the Fair Food Program.
Yes.
Wendy's is deriving a profit from farm worker poverty. I mean, they're actually deriving a competitive profit, a competitive advantage from farm worker poverty at this point, which is unconscionable.
Yes.
Okay, but that's the fast food industry. The food service industry, which is the name some people recognize, Sodexo and Aramark, the companies that provide food for cafeterias, school, universities, and that sort of thing, they're both in. And Compass Group, which is actually the biggest of the three, I believe, is in. And Bon Appetit, which is a smaller food service company, is also in.
Uh-huh.
So virtually the entire food service sector is participating in the program. It's in the grocery store sector that we actually have a lower percent of participation, although the companies that are in are Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, and Walmart.
Uh-huh.
And that's a fairly significant percentage.
Yes.
Bring Walmart in, because in and of itself, Walmart is some 25% of the entire grocery industry.
And Walmart stepped up to the plate, you know, without consumers actually campaigning.
Uh-huh.
They came on board this year back in January, and it's an extremely significant development.
Yeah.
And those that are not on board yet include Kroger and Giant and Stop and Shop, both of which are owned by Ahold, or Royal Ahold, which
yes.
is a company based out of Amsterdam. I do believe, I wanted to add that Trader Joe's is on board. I don't know if we mentioned
yes,
that.
Greg did. Yes.
Okay.
But here in our region, the Southeast region,
Publix.
The largest Publix is the largest grocer, especially in Florida. It's pretty much virtually the grocer in Florida, but it's expanded out to the Southeast region generally, as far up as North Carolina at this point. And, you know, given that Publix is a company that was founded in Central Florida about 40, 50 years ago, and has lived in the same community as the Harvest of Shame.
Yes.
You know, the same community that created headline after headline of farm worker abuse and poverty and degradation for generations. You would think that Publix would be the first company to sign on, knowing how documented and real and longstanding the problem has been, and seeing up close how the solution works.
Yes.
Seeing up close the changes that are taking place in its own backyard. And yet, they stubbornly continue to refuse to join the Fair Food Program. And again, like Wendy's, there's just no sense to it.
Yeah.
You know, so we're hoping that just the continued success of the program itself is probably the most important argument. Just like Walmart signed on in January of this year because the program was so clearly successful. Yeah, and we hope that's going to help drive more companies to sign too.
Well, at this point, the question is not why don't you sign, but how could you not sign? And not why, but why not?
Exactly.
And that's the key to a company like Publix. It's like, well, are you saying that you don't want all these changes to happen in the supply chain? Because we don't really think that that's your corporate ethos.
Mm.
So it's a bit of a puzzle, but eventually these supermarkets will also get on board.
You know, we had a few of the producers of the Food Chains documentary, and Hamilton Fish was one, and he said he just thinks it's an old boy mindset at Publix that doesn't want anyone telling them what to do. It's hard to believe, except we only need to look at Congress to see how that often works. But this is about, it's human rights. We're going to take a break. I'll be right back with my two wonderful guests of the CIW and Fair Food Program, Greg Asbed and Laura Germino. We'll be right back. Stay with us. We're talking about some extremely important stuff for all of us. It's about the food we eat, especially vegetables and fruits and wine. We're going to get to Napa Valley in a bit. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. You don't see many successful revenge thrillers coming out of the low-budget indie world. But writer-director-cinematographer Jeremy Saulnier jumps confidently onto this difficult road and delivers Blue Ruin, a surprisingly satisfying journey for fans of this genre. Living a hobo's life, Dwight maintains a minimal hold on reality. He borrows empty vacation homes for the occasional shower and sleeps in his Blue Ruin of a car parked seaside at a Delaware beach. When Dwight hears that a man who brutally killed his parents is being released from prison, we realize what caused his mental breakdown. Dwight knows what he has to do, and he does it very badly. He's no trained killer, after all. Through this act, he is dropped into the vortex of a savage family feud, and he and his sister are soon in the malicious sights of a deadly clan of hardcore rednecks. Now, if you have Liam Neeson and $100 million or so, you might take this premise and reliably deliver a mighty satisfying revenge tale. But Saulnier has done it here, with an unknown cast and very little money. Ah, the romance of the Indie Challenge. When it works, it is just so satisfying. Blue Ruin. Not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. My guests today, Laura Germino and Greg Asbed, who are working, to say the least, that's putting it mildly, with the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, that's CIW. You may know that very recently, on November 21st, the premiere of the movie, the feature-length documentary Food Chains, came out. And what about the reaction, not just from you, Laura and Greg, but the reactions of the public who've seen it?
Well, you know, it opened in theaters in New York and Miami and Washington and Los Angeles to an incredibly positive response.
Yes.
In fact, in Washington, the theaters just lengthened the amount of time it'll stay and the number of showings, number of times it'll be screened in D.C. because of popular demand.
Yes.
So this is obviously something that is really moving consumers, and there's a site called Rotten Tomatoes where people review movies, and right now the consumers are rating it at 100%, you know, the viewers of the film.
Wow.
So we believe that this is something that is really getting a lot of word of mouth.
Buzz,
yes. That's
the word in the industry. Yeah.
That's the word. Clearly, CIW started in Florida and was perhaps, if I hope I'm not overstating, a primary target was Publix. That's P-U-B-L-I-X. I've lived in Florida, and if you go grocery shopping in Florida, you shop at Publix. But how did the book Tomato land, and then you and CIW sort of spread across the nation? I mean, your influence on other growers and farmers and retailers in other areas of the country. And, of course, the documentary Food Chains is just embellishing that. But you were already influencing even internationally. Tell us about that.
I think that the approach holds such great promise to be applied as a model in general for what would be not just corporate social responsibility, but what we have called worker-driven social responsibility.
Yes.
WSR, which is where you want a supply chain free of abuses, not because of some public relations goal,
yes,
but because of human rights.
Yes.
Because of genuinely wanting people to be treated right. And the United Nations, which, as you know, is an enormous organization based in Geneva,
yes,
has come and visited and investigated our model, the Fair Food Program model.
That's right.
That it fits the criteria for business and human rights around the world, that it could be applied almost anywhere. And because of some of the principles such as transparent supply chains, meaning that the corporate buyers would actually make it be where not some sort of murky thing where they don't know where their produce is coming from, but that they could actually say, oh, this produce is produced by this farm, this is our supplier, and if there are abuses on the farm, we will stop buying from this farm until the situation is corrected, for example. And that could be applied to a factory or really any other kind of product in a supply chain.
Yes.
And I would add, you asked how did what we're doing here become known,
yes,
across the country and across the globe now? And it really, we started the campaign for fair food back in 2001, at the start of this century. In fact, and earlier in the show, I mentioned this is really a 21st century movement for fair food.
Yes.
And it is that, because really, when we started in 2001, nobody had heard of Immokalee. Nobody knew what the problem was. But we went out into the street and we said, we kind of announced to the world that, in that case, Taco Bell makes farm workers poor.
Mm-hmm.
which is an intriguing statement to make when nobody's ever had that sort of analysis in the past. And we had to explain what that meant, but we took it around the country. We did a tour back in 2001 from Florida to Los Angeles and back.
Yes.
And on that tour, we took that message, the message that the food system has evolved over the past 30, 40, 50 years in such a way that all the power is at the top.
Yes.
The power is concentrated at the top. And that power in the marketplace has distorted things such that prices at the farm level have been reduced to the bare bones minimum. Mm. And within that minimum, at the same time that farmers are trying to get just that minimum for their products, they are also having to pay higher and higher bills to produce what they sell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Monsanto and the cost of diesel and all the things that go into production of on farms didn't stop going up over those 30 years. And so the farmers caught in the price squeeze, that squeeze ends up squeezing workers who get, you know, stagnant wages. And in fact, that's exactly what happened. You know, the 30 years before this program, workers were paid 40 cents per bucket.
Mm-hmm.
40 cents per 32-pound harvesting bucket, which is often a 35-pound harvesting bucket because they had to overfill them. They were forced to overfill the bucket. Wow. So often they get 40 cents in exchange for 32, 35 pounds of tomatoes.
Wow.
And so it was really almost a penny per pound they were getting at the time.
Gotcha.
And this was up until the program finally was implemented 4 or 5 years ago. And so now, that, you know, that was our rallying cry in 2000 was, you know, Taco Bell makes farm workers poor. And so we're asking for Taco Bell to pay a penny more per pound to nearly double farm workers' wages.
Yes.
That was the calculus back in 2001 and all the way through 2010, 2011 before the Fair Food Program actually got a chance to start to operate. Now today, which is interesting, is that, you know, here in Florida, in the Florida tomato industry, which has become a different industry overnight, the workers are earning, in many cases, that penny per pound, and wages are increasing. They haven't increased the full, nearly doubling, or the full amount that they could with the penny per pound, because not all the buyers are on board. But as they come on board, that the increase will continue to go up. So that's the campaign we launched back in 2001, and we could not have done it without the tools of the 21st century.
Yes.
Which are the internet.
Exactly.
And the access to the sort of more democratic access to media.
Yes.
That didn't exist in the past.
Exactly.
And so, you know, because we had to build an alliance with consumers in order to convince the very top of the market to fix the problems at the very bottom of the market.
You know,
that alliance could not have been built without the 21st century communication tools.
Again, we talk about the power of the consumer dollar, but it's also the consumer with a smartphone camera and Twitter account, Facebook page, all of them writing about and talking about and videotaping. The American public has become part of the solution. That's such a beautiful thing. But let's face it. I mean, when the United Nations and the U.S. Federal Department of Justice are looking at what you are doing at CIW and saying this is a good thing, and we're watching those who don't join. I should think all the fast food places should be advertising that they're a part of it, and that leaves Wendy's out. Or at the very least, everyone listening, if you have to have fast food, go to the fast food, McDonald's, Taco Bell, Subway. There are plenty who have signed on to the Fair Food Program.
Well, and you know, even the Department of State has actually recognized the Coalition of Immokalee Workers for our determination to eliminate forced labor in supply chains, and that was a national recognition.
Wow!
So you have the government, like you said, the government is watching all this and hoping that it succeeds.
Exactly.
And the other thing I would just add is that, you know, look, corporations can be very responsive to consumers who are socially aware, responsible consumer thing. I'm going to consume, but responsibly.
Yes.
And they are, in essence, democratic corporations in that they do respond to the wishes of the consumers.
Right. I'd like to remind people, we shouldn't just say all corporations are bad, or all CEOs or CFOs are bad, or Wall Street. I hate that, because it's not a street that's our problem. It's the people who work there. In that sense, corporations are people, because it's the people who are doing things. But the reality is, any businessman that's gotten as big as a Publix or a Kroger or Bank of America is listening to what the consumers are paying for. And that's where the consumers, again, are the power that drives this train. If you don't buy from people who mistreat other people, who deny them their human rights and decency, a decent place to live, a decent wage, then the people you buy from will do more of the good things, and the people you shun will go, well, maybe we need to be rethinking our policy toward humanity.
The, you know, the market is a is a remarkable thing.
Yes.
Because, you know, the market, generally, I think it creates poverty and wealth.
Yes.
Both, you know, and left to its own devices, left entirely to its own devices, I think the market, you know, in the case of the food market, you see where the consolidation at the top has driven lower and lower prices
yes.
at the bottom, which drives lower and lower wages
yes.
and poverty for farm workers, right? So that's how it sort of was until workers organized with consumers to intervene, because consumers actually live at the very top of the market.
Yes.
Really, that's where,
yes.
that's where consumers are.
Yes.
And so the market follows what the rung above it says to do.
Exactly.
The rule of the market.
Exactly.
And so the rung above corporations is consumers.
Is the consumer.
So corporations before the campaign started weren't hearing a message about that their consumers wanted fair food. But as we continued to organize, that message became louder and clearer. The thing about, I think you had mentioned earlier that one of your guests had said that it's sort of an old boy mentality working at work in public.
Yes.
And public's refusal to join. And I think that's probably part of the equation. But more than anything, it's an old school mentality. In
yes.
the sense that they're thinking like it's the 1980s grocery store.
Yes.
You know, today in 2014, nearly 2015. And it's not. The best corporations get ahead of the market.
Yes.
The best corporations read where the market's going and get ahead of it. And that's, you know, that's what Publix and other companies like Wendy's just seemed really either reluctant or just incapable of understanding, which is that millennials in particular.
Yes.
Any opinion survey of millennials.
Yes.
Find overwhelming support for economic fairness in the things that they use their consumer dollars for. So those kids are going to be the ones buying groceries for their families in 10, 20 years. You need to be on their good side.
Exactly.
You know, that's what is kind of a head-scratcher for us.
Well, like we've discussed before, you know, market power. Well, the market can be used for bad or it can be used for good. Markets
yes.
are amoral.
Yes.
And
yes.
you can choose to use the market for good.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you end up actually back again to that win-win-win situation. Well, I'd say win-win-win-win.
Right.
Four wins.
Yes.
Because you've got workers, growers, meaning suppliers, buyers, and consumers in our case.
Yes.
And you can apply that to any industry, really.
Exactly.
Where the let's say the factory owner, the garment factory owners or anywhere else.
Exactly. You know, I've said, I've written recently even to you who inherit the earth, and that's the millennials, it's you're either going to get the earth that we leave you or the earth that you start telling us to leave you.
That,
you know, and it's sad to put it that way. As a classroom teacher decades ago, I used to say to my high school and middle school students, when certain things had to go a certain way, I said, "Did you see this gray hair? People with gray hair rule the world. Now what you've got to do is go get some gray hair and then it's your turn." But I but I think I would amend that now. They can't wait until they have gray hair.
No.
They've got to speak out, and of course, as you say, Greg, the internet and social media is the way to drive this message. I want to take, you know, for those who may be wondering, why are we so fired up about this in 2014? For those who, you know, who've seen their definition of migrant workers is an old black and white movie, maybe even The Grapes of Wrath or something. And they think all that must have changed by now because we don't have black and white movies anymore primarily. But the reality is there are major players at the top of the food chain. And let me throw in what that food chain is. I think we sort of touched on it, but let's just give it a specific. You're talking about the people who pick the food, who harvest the food, and above them are the growers or the farmers, but the people who own even big farms are pinched financially, and then beyond those are the distributors, those who take the food once it's picked and loaded up, and they take it to the various grocery stores and retailers, and so there is where we find Publix and Kroger and Safeway, etc., but it's the corporate ownership of those grocery stores and supermarkets where the buck stops, quite literally, because they're making all of that money, but not all are sharing it down the food chain. Is that oversimplified too much?
No, not really. That's actually pretty much the picture.
Well,
you know,
Then I want us to talk a little bit so we know, I mean, we've been talking about this all along, we have been, but I just want to be, just to hit a few specifics. Migrant workers still exist beyond...
Oh, very, very much so.
Exactly. Yes. And they travel, just like we've seen in the movies, they're still doing it, they're traveling where the harvest is needed, yes?
Well, yes, you'll see people either in, you know, their private vehicles or being transported much more commonly in old school buses painted different colors. So you may even see them coming through whatever area you're in, depending on where your harvest, you know, if harvest takes place in the summertime. And yes, the harvest is done by hand in tomatoes, oranges, green peppers, strawberries, cabbage, everything really.
And a beautiful and important fruit that you're not mentioning, though, which is watermelon.
Yes.
Which is also, it's one of the heaviest jobs there is. If you can imagine, wow, the 20, 30-pound watermelon, and the workers who pick those and harvest those are sowing thousands of them every day to each other, and bending over and picking up and sowing them, and bending over and picking up and sowing them, and then reloading them on the trucks. And you know, this stuff is still being done by hand because it has to be done by hand. And we like you say, you know, we actually run into a lot of people who say, "What? There's still people picking?
Yes,
you don't have machines?"
Exactly.
It's still people picking. And in most places, I want to make it clear that here in Florida in the tomato industry, there is a solution that is changing people's lives. But outside of the walls of that solution, most farm workers still earn poverty wages and still face some of the worst abuses you can imagine. You know, there was a PBS Frontline, you know, the documentary series that was done last year. And the title of the documentary was Rape in the Field.
Yes.
And that sounds raw and harsh because it is raw and
but
harsh.
But it's true.
A year-long investigation from California to Florida into sexual harassment and sexual abuse, sexual violence in the field against farm workers. And they said it was essentially, you know, endemic. And there's another survey that was done that showed that some 20-25% of women in the country in any job face some form of or report some form of sexual harassment that they've faced in the past, whereas in the field that number is 80%.
Which is why the expansion of the Fair Food Program is so important.
Yes.
Because like Greg was saying, right now it is in tomatoes. And that, in this brave new world of the Fair Food Program, we have reached the level of prevention of slavery, meaning forced labor, human trafficking, and sexual violence in farm work.
As but defined by the Department of Justice.
Yes. And outside of the Fair Food Program, however, there is still the old world.
Yes.
So we are working the ugly old world, I would have to say.
Yes.
So we're working on parallel tracks where we've reached prevention in one area, but we're still working with federal authorities and state authorities on eliminating existing abuses that continue to prevail in other crops, you know, outside that industry.
So it is still an issue how migrant workers are treated, the people who pick the food, who harvest the food that feeds the best fed country in the world. It is still an issue that needs to be addressed. Before we go, we're kind of running out of time, Greg.
And we have a solution.
Yes, and I want to ask about that. How can we help CIW achieve its solution? You've got the solution. It's in the works. It's working in Southern Florida. It's spreading out across the nation. It's depicted in the feature-length documentary Food Chains. How can we, the general public, the consumer, help CIW, Coalition of Immokalee Workers, make this a national practice?
But the way we came about our solution was through action. Actually, we have a saying in Immokalee and in the CIW that says consciousness plus commitment equals change.
Yes.
Consciousness, we call it C plus C equals C, which is not very good mathematically, but it's very true in terms of social change. Consciousness plus commitment equals change. And so it begins with consciousness.
Yes.
And what, you know, any consumer who truly, you know, cares about human rights behind the products that they buy now knows, by listening to your podcast, now knows that there's a solution.
Yes.
And to learn more about the solution and how you can plug in, there's a website called fairfoodprogram.org.
Yeah.
Fair Food Program, spelled out one word, as you spell it, .org. org. There's a link in there that says take action, and it tells you the different ways you can take action wherever you are. You know, there's Wendy's restaurants across the country, and for the most part, there are grocery stores across the country that are still not part of the solution. And so the way we've gotten here is by taking action.
How does one walk into a Wendy's or a Kroger or someplace we have not mentioned across the country and know that this is a store that is not has not signed on to the Fair Food program? Tell us about, you've got a sign, yes, that tells us, and then
we have just this past month, we revealed the new Fair Food program label.
Yes.
That will be appearing in stores, in select stores, in the next, probably in December.
Excellent.
And certainly in 2015.
Nice.
So you can walk into a store and know that there are Fair Food tomatoes there by seeing that label. You can also see the label at the fairfoodprogram.org website. It's there. It's in the center at the very top of the website. But and the companies that have signed on are also there listed on the website. So you know that if you like to eat at Wendy's, you can go and look to see if Wendy's is one of the signatories of the Fair Food program. And it isn't today. That could change tomorrow. We have our fingers crossed every day.
Yes, yes.
But if they are still not, then you can know that they're not part of the program because you check the fairfoodprogram.org website. And then what you can do, and we've made it as simple as possible, as an individual, you can download what we call, it's there on the website, called a manager's letter.
Uh-huh.
And you just download that, print out, and then go to your local restaurant and say, can I talk to the manager?
Fantastic.
It's an empowering thing to do.
Yes,
as an individual. I mean, we've done it. And it's, you know, there's a grocery store here where we live that we've shopped for years. You know, and know the managers because it's a small town where we live.
Yes.
And the managers are nice people. And for the first time, I felt like when I went up there with my manager's letter to the manager, I felt like I was doing something besides just shoveling my money into the store's vault.
Exactly.
You know, I felt like I was actually having a conversation. And the manager actually enjoyed the exchange.
Excellent.
So, you know, everybody has that sort of place where they could go and they could say, you know, I've got this letter I want to share with you. And that's what you can do as an individual. There's a lot more you can do, and you'll see that on the website too, and with your community, with your university, with your church or synagogue or place of worship, all sorts of ways you can get involved.
Well, and you can print that manager's letter, as you were saying, take it into the supermarket, and you would be surprised at how many managers and baggers and cashiers are actually waiting for the day that the corporate office decides to sign on to the Fair Food.
Oh, yes.
May I say that goes for Publix as well. We know this for a fact.
Yes.
There are a lot of people who work at Publix that wish corporate Publix would do the right thing.
Well, there's no question that the real problem is at the corporate headquarters level.
That's
the real resistance as well. But we must go. We've had as our guests today Greg Asped and Laura Germino of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, which has done incredible things by establishing the Fair Food program. Listen to our show, spread the word, visit their website, print out the manager's letter, and go visit the managers of grocery stores and fast foods, especially Wendy's, in your area and say, sign on or we're going to buy from your competitor. Okay. Thank you so very much, both of you, Greg and Laura, for being on the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. You know I wish you all the best. Send me anything you think I need to help you in this solution. Okay?
Thank you. We most certainly will. Thanks for sharing the time with us.
Thank you. My pleasure. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Stay with us as we'll be right back with a final comment from The Reasonable Voice.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. Some special indie films are small. They take a little slice of life and explore that subject through a unique lens. And that is certainly the case with today's delightful selection. Written, directed, and acted by John Turturro, who snagged Woody Allen in his cast, Fading Gigolo explores the world of two simple New York booksellers confronted with a problem. Their bookshop is closing. What are they going to do? Well, suggests Murray, Woody Allen, why doesn't Fierafante Totoro become a gigolo, bring happiness to beautiful, lonely women like Sharon Stone and Sofia Vergara, and share the proceeds with Murray, the procurer? But the real reason Fading Gigolo works so well is its subtly beating heart. Sex is the catalyst, but the surprising success of this odd couple comes from Fierafante's intuitive ability to provide comfort to deep emotional need.
much more powerful than the quick fade of a casual diddle. Yes, Fading Gigolo is a small film, but as we all know, size doesn't matter. Indie veteran Totoro has undertaken a salacious premise and nurtured heartfelt sensitivity. Fading Gigolo. No longer in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Hello, I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, thanking you for joining us and becoming one of the Reasonable Voices heard around the world. In thanksgiving for Ferguson tragedy. My mother always said you get smarter the more you think for yourself, so be thankful for tragedy. Dad said when you stop at an intersection, look at the driver of the other car, not the car. When things broke down, Uncle Gino explained, it's gone Republican on me. But my grandmama haunts me still with, each of us has a definite major purpose, but timing is divine. Whether plopping down our money, our votes, or on our sofa, we are always falling for corporatism's sales pitch and politicians promising change, as if change eluded the masses, but the favored few could capture and deliver it at the bottom of a pot of gold, rarely conceiving it's we who change the direction, not the car, we who make the magic, not the stars, we who are both instruments and music, not financiers conducting bottom lines of tone-deaf members of Congress. Grief-stricken, we believed America was changed forever on 9/11. Then came Katrina flyover, screams of Sandy Hook children and teachers, and Christie tucking away millions of Hurricane Sandy relief, with little evidence of change. But despite GW's Great Recession, Boston Marathon bombers failed to keep us from crossing the finish line. And though politicians, fearful of equitable, affordable health care for all, accepted millions of election dollars to change it, and voters went Republican on us. Thankfully, they lost legal ground on voter ID laws, same-sex marriage, and preventing executive orders. As we lift ourselves up out of the ashes of attempted suicide by midterm election, change we can believe in materializes. Whether turkey sandwiches or moonlit belly bird-filled racing to preempt Friday hangovers before stuffing shoppers the day after taking from Indian givers, whether manhandling our way through pretend sales or being stepped over by bargain hunters, the almighty dollar keeps we, the consumers, at the top of the food chain. Thankful yet? Thankful for hands raised, hearts full, Immokalee farm workers and president unshackled from frightened corporate conservatives contributing billions to obstruct America's future. In their self-made rut, conservatives beckon us downward with manipulative TV ads, questionable prosecutors, sportsmanlike wife beaters, and lawless law enforcement without name tags or body cameras to assist in our own national burial. Ferguson, 2014 midterm, and mud-crawling immigrant children show us the way up and the way out. Over-consumers discover non-consuming power overpowers fire-consuming riots. Something has changed. Finally, a hint of national repulsion over raped daughters and gunned-downed sons. For a nation no longer quite dipped in the economic sauce of, by, and for the turkeys at the top, who, with malice aforethought, based our American dream with massive foreclosure fraud, I give thanks. In thanksgiving for Moral Mondays, Giving Tuesdays, and all those recognizing the good still outnumber the bankers, let us be grateful. Thank migrant workers harvesting our food, and Pope Francis embracing communion between evolution and Eden. Anyone can keep the faith when there is no rape, racism, violence, police state, abduction with intent to defile, corporatism, or OK Corral-style gunning down of our youth in city parks. If it was easy, anyone could maintain strength of character. But our measure is revealed whether we're leaving unarmed gunshot victims in the street for hours, burning police cars, or peacefully facing the root cause of our dissonance. Those people who benefit most from dividing us. The eminence of a nation is determined by the humanity of its people, not by life's roller coaster ride, but in how well, helping each other, we navigate the comedies and tragedies in our pursuit of solid rock on which to stand. If we allow, tragedies like Ferguson, 2014 voter ID sham, and Sabrina Erdely's Rolling Stone revelation about the University of Virginia will ignite in us the wisdom to turn ourselves around, to boycott perpetrators rather than demonize the persecuted. When Main Street rises above the manipulation of Madison Avenue, we regain balanced and principled footing. Then we will occupy the high ground and give notice to corporatism's political puppets, we have overcome. Join us. Become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. Thank you.
Thank you for continuing to listen to, support, and share the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio with family and friends, especially online. We enjoy hearing from you, and in response, yes, we are now accepting new company and business advertisers and welcoming organizations seeking to be one of our sponsors. So please do continue to email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com. However, if you prefer to simply make a donation, your donations are greatly appreciated and can be made through PayPal by clicking on the donate button found at the top of the homepage of thereasonablevoice.com website.
Thank you for joining us today to make every day as reasonable as possible. We hope you will download and share our downloadable podcasts. I am Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.